Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of November, recording at 9:28 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights of the week. Well, for stock markets, it's been bloody until today. Asian stock markets, which opened very weak following Wall Street's big decline last night, rallied as the day progressed, most closing with gains. Nothing spectacular, but it was an impressive recovery from the lows. European markets were not impressed and closed down, partly because Wall Street was weaker as the European markets closed. Wall Street had another volatile day, this time managing to close up 6.5% approximately on the Dow and the S&P, slightly less on the NASDAQ. Long-dated government bonds backed off their highs against that background. They have had an explosive week, however, particularly the U.S. Treasuries, which had their biggest up day in terms of bond prices yesterday, possibly ever. Climactic? We'll see. Now, in currencies, the dollar's wobbled a little bit. Well, it's been firm. It's wobbled a little bit today. It has been firm generally, but as they say, easier in here today, and that has helped the precious metals to firm, notably gold, which is up to $800 as I speak. That's up $55. And we also had a pretty good rebound by silver, but that's an eyebrow-raising move on gold. Crude oil, which has been extremely weak this week, surged back to $50 today. Got that? Surged back up to $50. Had been as low as 48.25 earlier in the day, so a little bit of hyperbole on my part, but just emphasizing the interesting fact about how low it actually is. Most commodities, well, mixed day in terms of gains and losses. The big losses that I can see right now appear to be corn and excuse me, and soybeans. Okay. So, what's going on here overall? Well, for stock markets, it's been traumatic, with financials leading on the downside, indices becoming even more stretched as this global deleveraging has actually continued. Judging from what's happened in the currency markets, in which the dollar has remained firm, but it hasn't been surging up the way stock markets have been surging down. I mean, my feeling is that in terms of equity markets, that we've seen a buyer's strike. And so, yes, we've had some additional global deleveraging taking place, not least due to redemptions, fund redemptions. We've had some forced selling. We've had some capitulation selling. People are tired of holding on. NUE selling. They just really just want to get it off the books, as it were. And of course, the economic news has been diabolical. And investors who have the potential to buy, as I say, have largely been on strike or hunkered down in foxholes, because why go in if it's catch a falling knife territory, and when confidence is so low, and when there's so much volatility overall? Now, interestingly, some of the bears have been extrapolating forecasts. We have an email to that effect. In other words, making bigger forecasts on the downside. Now, something I'm sure that almost all of you have seen if you've been following markets for more than a few years is that, cast your mind back, when were people in previous cycles? When were they at their very most bearish? Well, it's virtually a rhetorical question because you'll say, well, it was down at the market lows. And if I ask the converse of that, when were people most bullish? I'm talking about the crowd, of course. When was the crowd most bullish? Well, almost inevitably at the top of markets. And partly too, it's not that everybody's stupid. They do get caught up in the manias and also in the man in the depressive stages of the downward cycles. But also people who are long, and it's not just stock markets. Take gold. When gold pushed earlier this year, when gold pushed above $1,000, then people were saying 2,000, 3,000, even though precious metals were quite overextended on the upside, as we were saying at the time, and as you can certainly see from the charts. Now, as I say, it's not that they're stupid, although they do get caught up in the in the mania. But there's another factor as well, and that is that when there is a perception that markets are getting a little too hot, a little bit risky in here, to calm themselves down, they're very if they're being emotional rather than analytical, there's a strong temptation to throw out a large target or to respond to somebody else's large quantum leap target on the upside, which seems more reassuring. Ditto on the downside, and people have short positions. Now, those who have been clever enough to be short in this market also know that this decline has broken just about every record. Now, perhaps that's justified by fundamental economic factors. It is bound to be at least partially justified. But we've also had a lot of indiscriminate selling, as we know, and various indicators have gone to extremes and virtually off the charts, to coin a phrase. So, with bears knowing this, seeing the downward accelerations, which are usually climactic and ending signals, seeing the deviation from the 200-day moving averages that have taken place, seeing the sort of activity which at its largest included a trough to peak rally on October 10th of nearly 15%, nearly 16% for the Dow, they're going to be a little bit nervous. It's not surprising. So the opposite of the mania, big target on the upside at the top, on the downside, let's single out a big target on the downside and extrapolate the S&P's decline for a few more hundred points. Well, I think the S&P closed yesterday at 754, and on that basis, I think it was also down 54 points. Don't hold me to those numbers, but that's close to it. And well, just extrapolate that forward, as I mentioned in my comment today, and you've only got 14 and a half days before it gets to zero at that rate. Which I'm not forecasting, and I doubt many others either, although with all this talk of depression, it may seem that people think Wall Street is going to go down vastly lower. Now, again, to hammer the home of the point, I cannot say that this market has bottomed, because we don't see any base formations. We see some ending signals, but so far, the capitulation selling that we've seen has only led to technical rallies within the overall downtrends, and those technical rallies have been about the same size overall. So, again, I emphasize that point. These markets are still in overall downward trends, but that because I'm not extrapolating this decline. A lot of people interpret that because some sentiment is so bearish in so many quarters, they say, well, you're bullish. Well, it doesn't feel bullish to me. I've been as frightened as everybody has been in here, but I do see the much improved valuations. I do see one problem after another going away in terms of, as I've mentioned before, in terms of the oil prices. Remember when people were talking about crude oil being at $200 before the end of the year? Now that would have been a really serious crisis. Instead, we're at 50 here. So that's good news for the global economy, particularly for emerging markets. Food prices way, way off the highs. That's very good news for the global economy. The dollar crisis turned out not to be a crisis, unless exporters now feel it's in the U.S. that it's a bit of a crisis for them in terms of their consolidated earnings, which go down because of the dollars gains. So a lot of things that we were worrying about have changed. Now that doesn't mean that the credit crunch, insolvency problems are over. They rumble on, but you know, an awful lot of that is factored into stock markets. Then let's take the depression theme. I get an increasing number of subscribers in their emails telling me that the USA's U.S. subscribers telling me that it's the economy's in a depression. Well, I don't doubt that it feels like a depression, and it's certainly scary when you get these iconic name U.S. companies going bankrupt or all but bankrupt and having to be rescued. This is terrifying stuff. It's a very severe recession. We've seen that recession certainly coming. We've known for a long time that the U.S. was the epicenter of global economic risk, sadly. So a lot of this is already priced into the market, but this is not like the 1930s depression. For one thing, the banks went bust in the 30s and depositors lost all their money. That's certainly not happening this time around, nor is it happening in Europe. And there was virtually no social welfare net back in the 1930s. It's very different here today. That doesn't mean that unemployment won't go up a lot. That doesn't mean that a lot of companies won't fail. That doesn't mean that there aren't huge problems in terms of debt and default and deleveraging, overextensions. That's a nice recipe for, well, it's not a nice recipe, it's a nasty recipe for a very protracted, slow period of underperformance for the U.S. economy. Really, really tough times. But are they talking about a depression in Shanghai or in the growth areas of Mumbai? I don't think so. So let's try to put this in a little bit of perspective here. Again, I'll add, I don't have any evidence that these stock markets have seen their actual lows, but they've gone down one heck of a long way. Some phenomenal values are appearing, particularly in emerging markets. We also have central banks which reacted way too late, you know, in terms of they were fighting inflation up to only a few months ago. Just think of the ECB, the European Central Bank's last rate hike. Was that in June or July? I can't remember. I think it was probably in June. But what a silly move that was. So, but now, what do we see? Crisis-oriented, reactive central banks are throwing everything at the system here to pump in liquidity, to break the credit log jams. And everybody says, well, it doesn't work. Well, then they keep on doing it, and they keep on, and they are committed to stimulating. And I think an adage that I haven't heard anyone mention recently, so all the more important that I should mention it, is don't fight the Fed. That applies to other central banks. Now, it's not going to work initially. It takes time, and people say it isn't working. But these central banks become ever more aggressive. They continue until they succeed. And people say, well, hey, the Fed hasn't got any more ammunition because rates are already down to 1% and probably going to go lower. I agree they'll go lower, but they can print plenty of money. And long-term interest rates are way down, and eventually that's going to feed through into the into the system. It's not happening immediately. It's part of the problem. China, but it will happen. China, watch for a progressive series of interest rate cuts. Ditto India. So my point is that we know a lot about the worst of this crisis, and I think people are overlooking a lot of the actual improvements that are taking place, and against the background of some really attractive valuations at these levels. So, you know, no, in answer to some of these emails, I'm not tempted to go short in here at this stage. I'm very tempted to buy, but at the moment I'm watching, and I wouldn't mind seeing some base formations. I'm not going to try to pick the low, personally. I may prefer, you know, to come in when I see attractive-looking base formations, and I'm fascinated, meanwhile, by monitoring this overall environment. People say, why aren't you trading? They want me to trade. Well, I'm glad to hear that, but I don't want to trade in this environment because the volatility is such that it's too easy to be whipsawed. It's too much like throwing dice in a casino when we're getting these 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15% moves on a day. That's not the type of environment that I actually like as far as trading is concerned. And I've had some personal concerns as well, as you know. So I'm happy to focus on the analysis and our commentary and the audios, as is Owen, and we'll both get back to trading when the environment feels a little bit less like a crapshoot to us. Okay, long-dated government bonds now. They've been a great haven, there's no doubt about it, but my goodness, that move was climactic yesterday that we saw in the U.S. Treasuries. Now, if the U.S. government is smart, and I suspect it is, or elements within it certainly are, this is a heaven-sent opportunity for the U.S. government to sell as many long-dated government bonds as it possibly can. Tap that demand. Because they're able to get comparatively cheap money in here today. That's good for the U.S. economy in the very, very long term. It's bad for the people who overstay their welcome in that market. I'm more interested in the bombed-out corporate bond market, but those charts are all in precipitous downtrends for the most part. But that will change. I'd like to see some evidence of that change, but that's an interesting area, and a lot of savvy subscribers have been asking us to add additional bond funds to the chart library, which is a wonderful resource now in terms of in terms of financial instruments. So that's interesting. Watch the U.S. dollar. This is so critical. And I've had people sort of urging me to come in and buy the dollar in here. Well, that suggests to me that people are long the dollar, and well done, particularly if you caught it early. But this dollar move is unsustainable. And that doesn't mean it's over. I don't see the evidence that it's over, but we're seeing some preliminary signs of fatigue for the overall dollar upward trend. And a weaker dollar and a weaker yen are, I think, important in terms of signaling one of these great conjunctions in markets. In other words, a weaker dollar, and certainly precious metals will take off. I think they're already beginning to anticipate it. judging from gold's action here today. And I think if we see a weaker dollar, that as that occurs, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see firmer stock markets, because that will be signaling to a lot of people that the worst of this global deleveraging will be over, at least for a while, and possibly longer than just for a while. So these are interesting times, and we're going to get some, I think, quite important signals here relatively soon. And what else to mention here? Yes, when that happens, when that dollar does weaken, I would expect gold to continue its move higher. And I would also expect a lot of depressed commodities to rebound. Now, have a look at the Browning newsletter. That's the one on climate change, which I'm posting in here today. Fascinating item about the polar caps, also Russian volcanic activity, also sunspots. Wrap it all up, and well, it's you'll see it in their headline, cold. And not least for North America, they're expecting quite a cold winter, particularly midwinter. That's going to affect energy contracts. Natural gas down here has been steadier than crude recently, and I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't in a base building process. Owen produced that chart here today. And crude oil down at $50. Well, naturally, people are forecasting it down to 40 and 30. I have to confess, it's been as low as 48.25 today. That's a big surprise for me, but markets are full of surprises. I don't think it's sustainable for the long term, but it's very good news in the short to medium term for the global economy. Well, I think that's pretty much it. Don't be surprised if we see some major reactions in some of the most dominant trends that we have been seeing recently. And on that note, I wish you a stress-free weekend. Whatever you're doing, I hope you enjoy it a great deal. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you for another week.